Welcome to Short Hops, Derek Van Riper here with Bernie Pleskop, and a very Merry Christmas to all the listeners out there, and a Merry Christmas to you, Bernie. It's the day after Christmas as we get back on track. The holiday recording schedule, not very normal, but Bernie, I hope you had a wonderful Christmas. How was your day?
Yeah, everything was super, Derek, one of our best. Same to you and all our listeners, and if you are missing baseball, sit back. We've got a long, long session today, because the holidays interrupted us. So if you need a baseball fix, we're here for you. We've got a lot to talk about.
If you want to visualize the MLB offseason, each team having its own tree and a pile of gifts representing the transactions, the Padres' gifts would spill out of the living room, into the hallway, probably out into the front yard, just based on what we've seen from A.J. Preller as the new GM there this offseason. Since we last recorded, and we tried to speak last week, had some tech issues that destroyed the episode, the Padres have acquired Matt Kemp, Will Myers, Justin Upton, Will Middlebrooks, and Derek Norris. I mean, I can't remember a team that's acquired that many key players via trade in one offseason before.
And Derek, I have to say this. Regardless of whether they win or lose, I have to give that front office tremendous credit for changing the entire faces of the franchise and trying their best to give the fans of the San Diego Padres something to cheer about for the seasons to come. And I do think they'll win, by the way, and I think they'll be competitive in the National League West. But I just like the entire notion of saying, you know, let's give these people something to really cheer about. We need offense. Let's go get some offense. And by the way, folks, their pitching isn't bad either. And they've got a couple guys like Corey Lukey coming back if he's healthy. So, you know, this is a team that's definitely on the rise.
Yes, in terms of free agents, the Padres haven't done much, but they did bring in Brandon Morrow on one of those contracts. I think it's very incentive-laden, kind of a team-friendly deal where if he stays healthy, it turns into something that could be pretty valuable. If he doesn't really get healthy, maybe he moves to the bullpen, but the investment's pretty limited. I think they could probably still improve the bullpen. That's one area of need. I'm really curious to see who plays center field in this configuration. And actually, if you look at the offense as it's constructed right now, I mean, they have probably six or seven quality big league outfielders if everyone were to be healthy. There has to be some trades coming still. I wonder if Will Myers might actually get traded again. I mean, there was a rumor floating around, I think, late last week about the possibility of Myers going to Philadelphia as part of a Cole Hamels deal. I think that trade would make a lot of sense for the Padres because they have a couple of guys who can play center field on the roster in Will Venable and Cameron Maben. But as long as Upton, Myers, and Kemp are all there, there's really nowhere for Maben or Venable to play outside of having fourth and fifth outfield roles.
And I think that's the beauty of the San Diego Padres right now in late December, is they have the surplus of outfielders. Not, you know, Carlos Quentin among them, Seth Smith among them, if he doesn't play first base. So now if you have a weakness in the bullpen, or if you want a fifth starter or a different starter in case Brandon Morrow goes down, or you don't want Robbie Erlen there, now you go out and you put a package together and you can play for Cole Hamels or maybe some other starter that's available. So the depth in the outfield is similar to what the Boston Red Sox have, but I think San Diego's is even deeper. And ultimately, I think Will Venable will get lots of time in center field if he's not traded. I think Will Myers is a logical trade chip because Venable could be better in center field than Myers.
I almost wonder, Will Myers has moved around a lot during the course of his development as a minor league player. Originally was a catcher when he was in the Royals system, but if you trace everyone back far enough, you'll find they either played catcher, shortstop, or they pitched. But if you look at the first base depth chart in San Diego, I'm not sold on Yonder Alonso as an everyday first baseman. It makes me wonder if there's a possibility that Will Myers might actually move into the infield and play first base, which would ultimately open up those at-bats for Maben and Venable. And then they wouldn't even have to trade Myers away. I mean, that's another thing that I think they could do, but I haven't really seen anything that suggests they're going that direction.
See, I think that's the beauty. And they could also play Seth Smith at first base. Without a doubt, he could do that. So they are so deep in so many places. They're not deep at third base. And I want to point out, Derek, that I'm not sure Will Middlebrooks wins the third base job outright over Yonjervis Solarte. I think they're going to have a bit of a fight in spring training to see who wins that job. I don't think they're handing it on a platter to Will Middlebrooks. But again, they've got some depth there. They've got an extra guy. They have a little bit of an issue at shortstop. They could probably fix that a bit. Alexei Amarete is their shortstop now. So I don't know that they won't go out and make more deals to get some depth in those positions.
I think Middlebrooks is at least intriguing, though. They bought low on a guy that adds some right-handed power to the bottom of the lineup, and they have plenty of right-handed power in the middle with the guys that we talked about as acquisitions already. But you're right, they're not just going to simply hand him the job. We're talking about a guy in Middlebrooks who struck out 70 times in 234 trips to the plate last year for Boston. He only hit 191, had a 256 on base, and hit just two home runs. So health, I think, was a big part of his struggles in 2014, but definitely not a lock to be that starting third baseman, even though he's probably the favorite for me at this point. I'm trying to handicap it, at least from a fantasy standpoint. Let's talk about the Chicago White Sox, Bernie.
I just want to make one correction. It's Alexei Amarista. I think in my head I pronounced it wrong. So anyway, Amarista is their shortstop now, and they also have Clint Barmas. So they do have some depth at shortstop, but I'm not sure they're going to be happy with that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Definitely looks like a weak spot in the starting lineup right now. We'll see if there's a move coming. But let's talk about the White Sox. We talked about them at the winter meetings because they had made a pretty big splash by signing David Robertson at that time and, of course, making a big trade for Jeff Samardzija. The White Sox, prior to the winter meetings, had already signed Adam LaRoche. And now to add to that, they've added Melky Cabrera. I mean, this is a lineup that is rapidly improving, and I think much like the Padres, you could see a pretty big step forward in terms of total wins from the White Sox. And the thing I like about them, too, is if you look around, they don't really have they don't have really more than like one or two weak spots in the lineup, which is pretty good for a team that had a few a year ago. I mean, second base is a question mark. Carlos Sanchez could be the starter there, and I think third base is a little weak with Connor Gillespie, but if those are your two worst players in your everyday lineup, you're in decent shape. I actually like what they have behind the plate. They claimed Rob Brantley off of waivers a while back, too. I think he actually could wrestle that job away from Tyler Flowers. But if you're looking at the AL Central right now, Bernie, who's your current favorite to actually win that division?
Well, I think the White Sox have snuck up on everyone. I think they're going to give the Tigers a real fit. And it all is going to, for Cleveland, it's going to depend on their pitching. If that starting rotation is what I think they can be, they'll be in the hunt. So I look at those three teams, and then Kansas City has not really weakened themselves that much. Sure, Shields isn't in the starting rotation, but, you know, let's not sleep on Kansas City. So now you've got four, I think, very solid clubs that could go out and chase the pennant. And don't write any of those clubs off, not even the Minnesota Twins, because you never know. Look what Kansas City did. And I think everyone is looking at them now and saying, you know, we could be this year's Kansas City. But you've got to get through Adam Eaton, Melky Cabrera, Jose Abreu, Adam LaRoche, and Avisail Garcia in that order. That's a tough top of the lineup to navigate through.
Yeah, and the depth guys, again, I think are actually a little bit underrated. Alexi Ramirez is in there. And if Gillespie's hitting seventh, I don't mind him down there. I don't think he's great, but I don't think he's bad necessarily either. With Melky going to the White Sox, though, that takes a key piece off the board for the Seattle Mariners. The Mariners were previously believed to be in the hunt for Melky Cabrera, and as their outfield's lined up right now, it's still Dustin Ackley in left. It's Austin Jackson, who they acquired at the trade deadline last year, in center. And currently, it's Justin Ruggiano penciled in right. That's not going to hold up. They're going to do something. But where do the Mariners go from here now that Melky is on the south side of Chicago?
I think they're going to have to make a trade. You know, I think they really wanted Justin Upton. I think they were in on that if they could have gotten Justin Upton. They didn't. I think they're going to go back to Boston or maybe to San Diego and try to make a deal, you know, for a guy possibly a Carlos Quentin type, who could, you know, possibly fit there. But obviously San Diego has the depth. So do the Red Sox. You go to them and you may have to give up one of your young pitchers. And they certainly have plenty of them, but they're going to have to sacrifice one of them at least to get a piece away from either the Red Sox or the Padres.
Now, I want to talk about the players. We talked about the Padres to start, and I don't think we've ever really let off a podcast talking about the Padres before. All the wheeling and dealing they've done, obviously they've given up a lot of big pieces. So I want to talk about what they gave up and see if the teams that actually gave the Padres more proven talent did pretty well in some of these trades. The Tampa Bay Rays obviously lost Will Myers as part of that deal. That was a three-team trade between the Padres, the Rays, and the Nationals. In that deal, the Padres gave up Rene Rivera, they gave up Birch Smith, and they gave up Jake Bowers. They also gave up Joe Ross and Trey Turner, but Ross and Turner went to Washington as part of the deal. Rivera, Smith, and Bowers went to Tampa Bay. And the Rays also ended up getting pieces from the Nationals. They got Steven Souza and Travis Ott. So a lot of moving parts here. Ryan Hannigan was briefly a Padre, but they traded him right away, so we don't need to spend too much time talking about his influence on San Diego. But how do you feel about what the Rays did, especially here, getting Steven Souza and a cast of young talent to help replenish that farm system?
Well, I want to start with Rivera, because I think he is going to be a loss. He is a terrific defensive catcher and a great shepherd of pitchers. So I think, you know, that's a big subtraction. Rivera is an extremely good piece on a ball club. Birch Smith I saw in the Arizona Fall League, and I wasn't too crazy about him. But apparently, you know, pitchers are tired at that point. So my jury is out on him. But I wanted to start with Rivera because I think he's a really solid. He's not a prospect. He's a veteran player, and he's a darn good one.
Yeah, Rivera, I think, is one of those guys that the Rays tend to find catchers that maybe the rest of the market does not value properly. They've done it for a few years now, and I just wonder if Rivera is yet another player that kind of fits that mold. Smith didn't look good in the Fall League, but at the same time, I think you're right. I think he was tired. I think he dealt with an arm injury throughout this year and really didn't get healthy. I think he's more of a 2016 guy because I'm kind of concerned that he might need some kind of elbow surgery, but we'll see what actually happens between now and spring training. Maybe whatever health issue limited him in 2014 will be fine without an operation. He'll be able to contribute to the Rays in some capacity. This is a guy that can touch triple digits with the fastball and actually has a pretty good breaking ball, just doesn't really have that third pitch. So there's some question as to whether he can remain a starter in the long run. But he put up some good numbers moving through that Padres system in 2013. He got knocked around with the big club, right, but he's shown the ability to miss bats.
I think the biggest name that they will miss is more than likely going to be Max Fried. The lefty that they gave up is a big, big upside guy. He is coming off of Tommy John surgery, but he's a lefty with a couple of very good pitches, and he is a rotation starter. And if he does recover from Tommy John, he's a two or a three in a rotation. That's how good this kid was. And he was among their top prospects for a number of years, last couple of years. And I got to see him once. And when I saw him, I wrote a lot of notes about him because I said, this kid's going to be a star. And then, of course, he had the elbow injury and had surgery. So he won't be back right away. But Max Fried is a guy to watch.
It's Fried, Jace Peterson, Dustin Peterson, and Malik Smith, along with some international bonus compensation, going to Atlanta in the trade that brought Justin Upton to San Diego. The player I'm most curious about in the three-team deal, I think, is Steven Souza, because he was blocked in Washington.
Absolutely.
He's got that combination of power and speed. You look back at him a couple of years ago, I think as the story goes, he found religion, which helped him focus on baseball because he had some major maturity issues that now seem to be in his past. He's a little bit older than you might want in a potential breakout player, but when you factor in the path that he's taken to get to this point, it makes a little bit of sense. Do you think he's an everyday guy for the Rays who could actually be a five-category player for fantasy owners?
I absolutely do. I think he is going to start in their outfield. I think he is an underrated guy. People will undervalue him in fantasy, but once he gets it going, after the recognition of pitches start kicks in, I'm not saying he's going to light the world on fire this year, but he is going to be a player. And I would say in the 2 years, in 16 and 17, that's when he'll blossom. Steven Souza, yeah, very good ball player. I've seen lots of him. He puts the bat on the ball, and I like that.
You think about the Rays, too. They had to play a good chunk of last season without Will Myers because Will Myers was hurt. And when he played, he wasn't the same player that he was as a rookie. So it wouldn't be surprising to see their production from the right field spot actually go up if they use Souza as their everyday right fielder, or at least if Souza produced more than what we saw from Will Myers a year ago. I think that's easily something he can do, but he might be able to do something close to what we saw from Myers back in 2013 when Myers won the Rookie of the Year honors for the Rays. Now, this is a team in Tampa. They're going through that little bit of a rebuild, but they're kind of like Oakland, where they don't ever completely tear it down. They just make a few moves, and then they kind of overachieve time and time again. I think they're still positioned to do that because that starting rotation is very strong. You've got Cobb, you've got Archer, you've got Smiley, you've got Odorizzi, you've got Colome. Eventually, you get Matt Moore back. This is a pretty dangerous team if they're able to avoid injuries.
I totally agree, and I think Souza's going to be a middle-of-the-order hitter for them. I think you're going to be seeing a lot of RBI chances for him. This is a much better club, I think, with him than with Will Myers. Now, I want to talk a bit about Will Myers because I do think he's been overrated. What I've seen of him lately is very little progress on pitch recognition on breaking balls, especially sliders. I've seen a long swing, an aggressive long swing, that he has to get that in check if he's going to be successful. A lot of swing and miss in Myers' game ever since he was a raw rookie, and it really hasn't improved that much. Now, granted, he was hurt, so he lost some time last year, but he really has to make up for that time with some contact, and if he improves his contact, he'll be a much better player because he does have power, he does have speed, it's just that he is missing too many pitches.
Yeah, it's been a strange path to this point for Will Myers, but still a guy who just turned 24 years old a couple of weeks ago. So the Padres get that rare, cost-controlled, big league corner outfielder who actually still could develop into something more if he puts it together. But you're right, I think there's been a flat line to this point where he still hasn't figured some things out that people expected he would have solved by now. We'll have to see what happens with Will Myers. Now, the Washington angle in this three-team deal, I think, was really good. If Trey Turner becomes the player he's expected to be, this could be a steal because Joe Ross profiles, I think, is at least a number three starter, maybe a two. Turner has that 80 speed, so he could eventually take over at short or second base, depending on what happens with Ian Desmond in the long run. But to me, Turner could be that top-of-the-order table setter that, especially if Denard Span leaves eventually as a free agent, you have a guy that could come in, steal 50 bases, and get on base at a good clip, not far away from the big leagues. I feel like the Nationals did really well in this deal.
His nickname is Turner the Burner, and it's that for a reason. He played once a week on the taxi squad in the Arizona Fall League, so I used to make sure that I got to go see him maybe twice a week at the most. And the guy is as built. He can run. There's any doubt about it. But he's got a little bit of that Hamilton, D. Gordon. You got to get on base to steal. So if he can get on base, that's where his success will come.
Yeah, I think it's just the type of player that in a dynasty league, though, for fantasy, you want to stash a player like that away because the impact he can have in that one category alone is huge. And if he ends up proving capable of serving as the leadoff guy and drawing walks, he's walked quite a bit so far in the low minors, which isn't a big surprise because this guy played in college at North Carolina State and was a very highly touted player. I think before getting dinged up, he actually was considered a possible number one overall pick by a few teams, but that didn't quite materialize as his numbers last year for the Wolfpack slipped a little bit. But Trey Turner, I think, is a key piece, and Joe Ross might be in the rotation at some point in 2016. I don't think we'll see him at all this year, but they do have Jordan Zimmermann approaching free agency, and if the Nats can't reach a long-term deal to keep Zimmermann in D.C., it puts a lot on guys like A.J. Cole and Joe Ross to eventually take over a rotation spot.
Yeah, you know, there's no doubt. Ross was a major get for the Nationals, who really work on depth. That is Rizzo's key. You know, he wants depth, and so he can lose a guy like Zimmerman, and a guy like Ross could come in. Ross is only 21. So you're looking at very intelligent deals in the month of December by all of these clubs. You know, I can't fault any of the work that any of those GMs did. These were terrific trades.
Here's the other trade I want to talk about, the Padres, man. I want to talk about it from Oakland's standpoint. The A's picked up Jesse Hahn as part of this deal. There's Jesse Hahn and R.J. Alvarez going to Oakland. Derek Norris and Seth Streich went the other way as part of that deal. But Jesse Hahn has a nasty curveball, really good curveball, pretty good fastball too. I think there's some questions about whether or not he can use the changeup enough to have that third pitch, but at the same time, he has some really good strikeout stuff, and he moves from San Diego to Oakland, so it's not much of a downgrade in terms of home park. What do you think about the return that the A's were able to get for Derek Norris?
I think Hahn's going to go right into the rotation. I think he's going to trump some of the other pitchers they just got. And this is the thing about Oakland. They are a moving target. You don't know who's going to be in their rotation, who's going to be in their pen, who's going to start for them, because they'll be trading all the way up to the time the season starts. Yeah, I agree with you on Hahn, and I think he's going to be their number five. And this team is not going to look like it does today come April 1st. It just isn't. They're not done.
Let's start taking a look at some teams on the suddenly neglected East Coast, which never seems to be the case. Chase Headley has re-upped with the Yankees, Bernie. And this is a guy that could not catch a break last year. It was one injury after another. Back trouble, I think, was the most prominent injury, but he had some lower extremity troubles that lingered throughout the year. And eventually, I think he was hit in the face by a pitch in September, too. So it just kept getting worse. And even with all of that, he managed to play in 135 games, split between the Padres and Yankees. He's re-signed with a team that gives him a nice boost in terms of his home park. I think Chase Headley has a chance to hit 20 home runs again. I don't know if we'll ever see the 31 that he hit a couple seasons back in 2012, but I think the Yankees did a good job sort of buying low on Chase Headley in free agency. 4 years, $52 million. It's a lot less than Pablo Sandoval got from the Red Sox. I don't think the gap between them as real players is actually that wide.
I agree with you. I think this is a terrific move. You know, it all depends on Headley's health. If he can stay healthy and hit in Yankee Stadium, especially when he's hitting left-handed. For those that don't know, he is a switch hitter. But when he's hitting left-handed, which will be most of the time against right-handed pitching, I think the home runs are going to come. I don't know if he'll hit out of the two-hole or the three-hole because you've got Ellsbury there. But, you know, the Yankees haven't done much, but re-signing Headley, that's huge. It also forces them to put A-Rod into the lineup as a designated hitter, but he is going to come right up against Carlos Beltran. So now you've got Beltran and Rodriguez as designated hitters. Somebody's going to lose out in that battle, and I have a hunch it could be A-Rod.
Yeah, it seems like the Yankees are doing everything they can to not rely on him, but I also wonder if Beltran's elbow is healthy, if he just ends up playing a little more right field than people would expect. I think a lot of it just hinges on performance and the health of other key pieces here. I mean, Mark Teixeira's had a really difficult time staying healthy the last few years. If he were to go down with another injury, that opens up a lot of playing time at first base. But the Yankees were pretty active in the last week or so as well. They made that trade with the Marlins, which I didn't really see this one coming. They get Nathan Eovaldi, they get Garrett Jones and a prospect, Domingo German, in exchange for Martin Prado and David Phelps. Now, I thought Prado was a pretty big part of what the Yankees were going to do, at least for this year, as their everyday second baseman. But it looks like, as of right now, they're willing to let some younger guys compete for that job. So this is a pretty interesting trade for a couple of reasons. I liked Nate Eovaldi a lot with the Marlins. Now I'm a little less willing to go all in with him as a sleeper or a late-round target in my mixed leagues because there's a lot more risk for him pitching at Yankee Stadium.
And against the AL East, yes. But let me back up a minute. I think the key in this, and a sleeper in this, is Garrett Jones. You know, they're not sold that Teixeira is going to be healthy for 162 games. Greg Bird, their minor league first baseman, is not ready. So now you slip Garrett Jones in there against right-handed pitching in Yankee Stadium. This guy could be pretty dangerous, DVR. He is a much better player than we give him credit for in a short park hitting out of the left-handed batter's box. So I think Garrett Jones is going to have a big year. Of course, we said that about McCann in Yankee Stadium too, and it didn't happen. But they just added a big bat, and I think he is going to play much more than people think.
Yeah, I think it's easy to overlook Garrett Jones for a few reasons. He's always been a platoon-type player, but he had 27 home runs, playing half his games in Pittsburgh in 2012. So maybe he doesn't get back to that level, but back-to-back years of 15 in Pittsburgh and Miami, you'd think with the park bump with the Yankees, if he were to get the same amount of playing time, he'd get 20 home runs. It's not guaranteed, but I think he's the kind of guy that in a league like grass ball, which is an AL-only league, you take him late and you can actually get some pretty good profit out of him because Teixeira has the poor track record of staying healthy. A-Rod's not a lock to stick around. Jones does have some experience playing the outfield. He's played right field as recently, as last year he played 9 games out there, but in 2013 he played 32 games in right. So he might actually find playing time even if Teixeira's healthy.
And I'm looking for the Yankees to do a lot of platooning, especially at home. I think you're going to see Gregarious platooning at shortstop with Brendan Ryan. I think you're going to see possibly the DH be a platoon with or without Beltran. He might be playing right field. There are some opportunities, and I think one of them is going to be Garrett Jones in a platoon. Let's wait and see, but let's not sleep on the Yankees. They are going to be much more formidable, and I do think their additions on the mound, don't forget, it's like they made a trade. They're getting CC Sabathia back. They're getting Pineda back. So let's see if Tanaka is healthy. The Yankees are going to be pretty tough ball club.
They still, I think, would benefit in a big way from signing Max Scherzer or James Shields. I think that would give them a really big stabilizing presence at the top that they need, given the uncertainty with Tanaka's health, Pineda's inability to stay healthy, and then, of course, Sabathia coming off the major knee injury. But I think Sabathia has a pretty good chance of getting back close to 200 innings. It seems like he's progressed very well to this point in his recovery from knee surgery. We'll see if that holds up once he ramps up his activity during spring training. Let's talk about the team the Yankees were making that deal with, though. The Marlins getting Martin Prado. He's going to be their everyday third baseman. This is a completely new-look infield, with the exception of a Danny Hechevarria at shortstop. They've signed Mike Morse in free agency. He's going to be the first baseman. They made the trade for D. Gordon that we talked about during the winter meetings. Prado at third. Yelich, Ozuna, Stanton through the outfield. They added Matt Latos. If Dan Heron decides that $10 million is worth pitching for, even if you have to live in Miami for part of the year, they have a pretty good group of depth starters there. David Phelps is a back-end guy, is okay. Henderson Alvarez and Cozart are some young guys that can pitch. And eventually, around June or July, they get Jose Fernandez back. This is a Marlins team that suddenly is starting to look pretty dangerous.
I said this last year that this was one of my teams that I really wanted to watch, because I felt they were on the up and coming. This team is dangerous. This team is going to be in the hunt for the National League East Championship along with the Nationals. They're going to fight it out. Why? Because you've got to go through Gordon, Yelich, and Stanton, and then you get Morse and Prado and Ozuna in that order. That's pretty formidable. And then when Fernandez gets back, you put him in the rotation with Latos and Cozart and Alvarez, who's very underrated, and now you're really talking. This is a very, very good ball club. Echevarria at shortstop is terrific. I like them a lot. I think they and the Nationals are going to fight it out.
I'm with you. I think those two teams are definitely the favorites as of right now. We'll see if the Mets are able to make a move or two and put their name into the conversation as favorites in that division. But you look at what's happening in Atlanta, they're really tearing it down. I think they're going to be a team that struggles to compete in that division, at least struggles to compete with the Nationals. Maybe the Braves can be a wild card team, but I think that the Marlins at least have a chance to push the Nats, whereas the the rest of the teams in that division probably don't, as they are currently built. With Martin Prado being acquired by the Marlins had an excess of third baseman very temporarily. Casey McGee has been traded to the Giants. The Giants obviously looking for help to replace Pablo Sandoval. For now, McGee is going to be that guy. I think they're still probably looking around to see if they can get an upgrade, but this is what they have right now. And I think I brought this up when we were talking on the XM show on Christmas Eve, Bernie. As they are currently built, I feel more confident in the Padres than the Giants. If I were picking a team to win more regular season games in 2015, as of today, December 26th, I would choose the Padres over the Giants as these teams are built right now.
I totally agree. And the Giants are not bad. Don't get me wrong. They are the world champions. And they are a very good ball club. And they probably get Angel Pagan back healthy, which is like, again, making a trade without giving up a player. They're a very good ball club, but they're not deep. So if they do have an injury to Pagan again, they can't go and fill in center field at third base. Losing Pablo was a big move. Now you look at the pitching staff. You got to hope that Matt Cain can come back. Jake Peavy re-signs. He's your four. And right now, I think if they started the season DVR, I think Timmy Lincecum is in the rotation.
I think they at least have to try it one more time. If he flops in April, I think he goes to the bullpen, and then we have Petit take over that last spot. But it looks a lot like it did last season, but without Pablo Sandoval. You take away a guy that's a 3 or 4 win player, that's a big difference, because the Giants, to me, are one of those teams that often overachieve, and I think they overachieve for a few reasons. They have a great manager in Bruce Bochy. He handles the bullpen very well. Their team does fit their home park. They're built around a couple of very underrated players, specifically Hunter Pence. Hunter Pence might be one of the most underrated real life and fantasy players in baseball right now. Year in, year out, this guy plays 160 games and he fills all 5 categories while playing good defense in right field.
Absolutely. I totally agree. But let me just say this. I think between now and probably mid-January, the Giants are going to add a starting pitcher, either James Shields, or I really started thinking about this yesterday, Max Scherzer. They now have some money, and they've always had some money. They have a hole in their rotation. They have always been built on pitching. If you have to have 8 or 9 starting pitchers in your organization any given year, which is what you really have to have. The Giants don't have it, DVR. They maybe have 6 or 7. I think they're going after Shields or maybe Scherzer, and they're going to pay a lot of money and hopefully get one of those two. That's just my take.
And Lincecum's contract comes off the books after this season. So you take that, it's $22 million, I believe, that Lincecum's going to get paid this year that you don't have committed to anybody for 2016 and beyond. So you're right. I think at least one of Shields or Scherzer now could end up in San Francisco.
Hudson's 39 DVR.
Oh yeah, and Hudson's going to be out of the equation after this year too. So you got to figure that's not a long-term solution. Peavy is long in the tooth. I think the other problem you have in San Francisco is the depth that you mentioned. The farm system's not very strong. They don't have a lot of upper-level prospects on the cusp of contributing if injuries strike. I think that's what makes this team extremely vulnerable despite its recent success.
However, they have one of the best front offices and management in baseball. They have a fabulous field manager. They always seem to find the guy they need at the right time. I will never write off the San Francisco Giants. Same way I will never write off the St. Louis Cardinals. They always find a way.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a fair statement. Now, we're going to cruise through some other signings and moves here, get your thoughts on some things teams are doing to reshape their rosters. Jed Lowry returns to a familiar place. He goes back to Houston on a 3-year deal. He's going to be the shortstop for now. I think once they have Carlos Correa ready for the big leagues, I'm not sure how they're going to tackle it. I think there are some questions from some as to whether Correa is going to be a shortstop long term. Maybe Lowry's a guy they end up trading a year into this contract. Who knows how it plays out, but his only season with Houston, Bernie, was actually his best season in terms of power. He had 16 home runs in just 97 games in 2012. I think he's kind of a little bit of a batting average risk when you look at what he's done throughout his time in the big leagues. He's a .261 hitter, .330 on base percentage. But I think in this Houston lineup, it's a good park for him because he can pull the ball down the left field line when he's batting right-handed against lefties. And I think he can actually take advantage of being on a team that's still rebuilding. He'll actually put up good counting stats.
I think he's an upgrade for them right now at shortstop. I like the fact that he's a switch hitter. I don't think he will be consistently their shortstop moving forward, but he could be if, in fact, Correa profiles better at third base, which he does because of his height. You know, Correa is a big, big guy, but boy, he can play terrific shortstop. So his profile could be shortstop, third base, shortstop. Either way you say it, he is a terrific prospect. So Lowry might be there on a short-term basis, but don't rule him out. If he hits like he did the last time he was there, you know, from both sides of the plate, I think he will be a real upgrade for them. I'm not so sure that Houston has made as great of advances as they thought they would by this time. I look at their lineup and I still scratch my head.
Well, and the whole Brady Aiken situation following selecting him first overall back in June was just also a huge kind of embarrassing point, I guess you'd say, for the Astros in terms of what they're trying to do as that rebuild goes. And if you look back at the draft a couple of years ago, they had a shot at Chris Bryant. They didn't take him. And Chris Bryant looks like he might be the best prospect in the minor leagues right now. In fact, you have him ranked first overall in your top 10 right now. I mean, this is a guy that hit 43 home runs, if I'm not mistaken, between double and triple A last year. I mean, he's got a ton of upside, and he's only a few weeks into the season away from being called up. I think the Cubs are going to hold Chris Bryant at triple A for just a couple of weeks to make sure he doesn't accrue a full year of service time. They're not going to worry about Super 2. That's not the money, it's the control. And the reason for this, people ask me about this a lot, is he has Scott Boras as an agent. Scott Boras' clients do not sign contracts like the one that Mike Trout signed with the Angels or like the one that Evan Longoria signed with the Rays several years ago, just a few days into his big league career. So the Cubs have to protect their long-term assets and make sure that Bryant is on that team as long as possible. If he's on the roster on opening day and every day after that through the season, he accrues a full year of service time and he hits free agency 1 year sooner.
You analyzed it exactly correctly, in my opinion. Yeah, that's what I think they're going to do.
Now, let's talk about your top 10 prospects as a whole, though, Bernie. I mean, for Bryant, what makes him so dangerous? Because the thing that stood out to me, I looked at his spray chart. He doesn't just pull home runs down the left field line. He scatters them almost evenly around the entire field. There are very few power hitters that do that.
Derek, I was in Durham to watch the I was in Chattanooga to watch the AA All-Star game last year. He was in the home run hitting contest. Now, right beyond left field and right beyond center field is a road that is it's a paved road, but it's not very highly traveled, I don't think. It's right beyond the ballpark. Bryant hit balls that bounced off that road and flew into the air. I lost them. They were so high off the bounce. He has such great thunder in his bat. He hits some of the highest home runs I've ever seen to all fields. This is a guy that is so exciting to watch. The problem is at third base. I've seen a lot of balls go under him. I've seen his range be only adequate, but not good. His arm is outstanding. For me, he is a right fielder or a first baseman. They've got a right fielder. They've got a first baseman. They want him to play third. They're going to give him every opportunity to be their third baseman. He wants to play third. This is a terrific ball player. And a lot of people have Byron Buxton as their number one everywhere in baseball. I think it's Chris Bryant, so I made him my number one.
Let's go to the bottom part of your list. Let's start at 10 and work our way back up to Bryant at the top. You've got Corey Seager as your number 10 overall prospect right now. This guy's 6'4", 215. All the time I read about Corey Seager, and it every scouting report, I feel like, points to this notion that he cannot stick at shortstop. The Dodgers are adamant that he's going to stay there, but realize, again, the Dodgers, in their current build, in their front office, they're not going to tell you their plans. Like, that's just not what Andrew Friedman and company are all about. From what you've seen of Seager in the Fall League, does he stick at short, or does he move to third, or does he move somewhere else?
Yeah, he cannot get much bigger. He cannot be 6'6 and really stick at short. He's 6'4 now, 215 pounds. I think they don't have a lot of depth at either any of their infield positions. I think long-term he's going to be their third baseman. I just have a hunch, but they do want him to play shortstop. This is a very athletic kid with a big bat. Kyle Seager's brother, for those that don't know, Corey Seager, 6'4", 215 pounds, and he's only 20 years old. So he's a couple years away, but he is my number 10 because of the fact that he is going to be a star, no doubt.
John Gray is your number 9 ranked prospect, right-handed pitcher in the Rockies organization. I thought he'd see a taste of the big leagues in 2014. It didn't happen, but there probably isn't much left here in terms of development time. And you look at the Rockies rotation, they could certainly use him. Does he have the stuff to survive pitching half his games at Coors Field? I mean, nobody actually has perfect stuff in terms of the arsenal that can avoid damage in that park, but does Gray at least have a chance to be a true number one starter despite pitching half his games in Colorado?
If he were anywhere else, it would be a no-brainer, but it is going to be a challenge for him. I don't care who you are going to be challenged by Coors Field. If anyone can do it, he can do it. And I do think you're going to see him late in the season, maybe even sooner. But Gray is the real deal. Full repertoire, a little bit of inconsistent command right now, and that's what he has to figure it out. But ultimately, this guy is a top-of-the-rotation pitcher. 6'4", 235 pounds.
Big guy, big velocity, too. Mid to high 90s fastball that he leans on as that primary offering. Let's talk about Miguel Sano. He had Tommy John surgery, missed all of 2014. Tons of raw power. And this is a guy that could be starting at third base for Minnesota before this 2015 season is over.
No doubt about it. Another 6'4 guy, 235 pounds with awesome power. The only question about Sano has been his defense. I am going to see him in spring training. I'm making it my business to go watch him. I want to see if he's healthy and how he moves at third base. But Sano could help save that franchise. There is no doubt.
Joey Gallo is your number 7 prospect right now. You talk about a player that may actually even have more raw power than Chris Bryant. Gallo's the only guy in the minors who can probably even try to stake that claim. And you put these two guys in a home run derby together, you're going to see some of the longest home runs anywhere on the planet. Gallo's 6'5", 205 pounds. He's a third baseman in the Rangers organization, currently blocked by Adrian Beltre. But Beltre has not signed forever. And if the Rangers are patient enough with Gallo, he may ultimately be Beltre's replacement. Now, the question with Gallo for me, how much can he improve that strikeout rate? I mean, he is a ultimate three true outcomes guy. He strikes out more than Chris Bryant. He does draw his share of walks, but when he hits it, he hits it a long way.
He's Adam Dunn, except for the pitch recognition and the patience. If he becomes more patient, if he recognizes pitches sooner and the strikeouts become walks, he'll be Adam Dunn. And any team would take Adam Dunn in his prime. And that's what Joey Gallo is going to be. He's going to hit mammoth home runs and he's going to strike out with the bases loaded. So that's what you're getting. But you'll take the home runs.
I've also heard that Gallo, in terms of his arm, has an electric arm, a guy that if he pitched, he could throw 95, 96 miles an hour with his fastball. He could be that kind of guy, a good power arm. So if he doesn't play third, he could actually go play right field and be maybe a plus defender out there just because of that arm strength alone.
No doubt. You're absolutely right.
You got Lucas Giolito at number 6. This is a guy that the Nationals seem to have connected on. He needed Tommy John surgery coming out of the draft. Could have been the number 1 overall pick if he were healthy. The Nationals farm system is just loaded with high upside guys. It's crazy what they've been able to do over the last 5 years or so. A couple of number 1 overall picks certainly helped, and having those in years where Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg were available didn't hurt. But Giolito, to me, looks like a guy that could actually be part of a 1-2 punch with Steven Strasburg in the not-so-distant future. He might be the guy that actually does replace Jordan Zimmermann.
Can you imagine that? If you've got Giolito and Strasburg at the top of the rotation, this guy is 6'6", 255, right-handed pitcher. Listen to his numbers last year. 10.1 strikeouts per nine, a 10-2 record, and a 2.20 ERA with a 1.0 whip. That's not too shabby, DVR.
No, this is just really the first step in his development post-Tommy John surgery, too. This guy, if you can trade for him now in a dynasty league, this is probably the last opportunity to do it before the price goes completely through the roof. He's one of those pitchers that I think when he comes into the big leagues, he might just be good right away. There aren't that many that can do that, but I think Giolito has that type of talent. Number five on your list, Bernie, Francisco Lindor, a switch hitting shortstop, and I think I saw him DH a bunch of times in the fall league. I was so disappointed by that because I just happened to be at the wrong games. I just wanted to see him play defense. It happened with Raul Mondesi Jr. too. I think he DH'd for a game that I went to, but Lindor's not far away. The Indians insist he's going to AAA to begin the season. Do you actually believe them when they say that?
No doubt about it. I do believe it. A lot is going to happen. You know, it depends on Kipnis's recovery. But, yeah, I think they're going to start him in AAA simply because his hitting tool is behind his defense. And his hitting tool is good. It's on the come, but he's not there yet. So they want him to get some more reps at AAA against better quality pitching, and then he'll be there. He'll be there at some point in 2015, but not to start the season, unless they've got further middle infield problems, which I don't think so. And that's why you can't have too many middle infielders. You need them for that depth.
I'm definitely with you there. Now, speaking of middle infielders, Addison Russell is your fourth-ranked prospect right now. Cubs acquired him from the A's midseason a year ago as part of the deal that sent Jeff Samardzija to Oakland. Russell has cruised through the minor league system to this point, level to level, has just been able to get through really fast. Is he eventually going to push Starlin Castro elsewhere? How do the Cubs handle their depth right now at shortstop?
Boy, I'll tell you, what a problem to have. You've got Castro, you've got Russell. So what do you do? And you've got Baez, but you're going to put Baez at second base, and you're going to have Bryant at third base. So, well, I don't know. I don't think they're getting rid of Russell, and I don't think they're getting rid of Castro. So what do they do? I do not have the answer for that, but we'll learn a little bit more in spring training. Russell isn't ready yet. He has more development time to do. And, you know, we've seen him forever, and I've seen him out here in Arizona an awful lot, but he's still very young. So he's not ready, and I think they're going to hold on to Castro.
Yeah, I feel like you're probably going to see Russell in September if you see him at all this year, otherwise 2016, and maybe a piece the Cubs flip again. I mean, you talk about unproven commodities. Even a top prospect, you don't know exactly what you're going to get against big league competition. He could return a big piece they need perhaps in the rotation. I know a lot of times it's Starlin Castro rumored to be on the move, but maybe the return for Addison Russell would be even better. Your number three prospect, Bernie, Byron Buxton, really disappointing 2014 in the sense that he just couldn't stay on the field, couldn't stay healthy. He's had some wrist issues, had the very scary collision in his AA debut that ended his year with a concussion. I'm giving him a pass for last year. It's just not his fault. I mean, the concussion especially was a complete fluke play. The wrist injury is a little bit more of a long-term concern. But this is a guy that I saw at in low A Beloit playing with Cedar Rapids a couple seasons ago. Looked like a man among boys at low A, as many top prospects do. But he could do everything. I mean, he's got power. He's got tons of speed. He's going to be a good defender. I think he's even going to hit for a really good average. The Twins are going to be really excited when he gets there. And I think we can still see him at some point very late in 2015.
Yeah, he's everybody's consensus number one. And I have him at number three because of the injury concerns. I'm not sure he's going to be out on the field enough. This is a guy who cannot stay healthy, and it's just bad luck. And he left the Fall League again injured this year. So you're right. He's got five tools. They're all good. His speed is beyond what I thought it was. He closes on balls so quickly. He's just a terrific ball player. He's 6'2", 190 pounds, doesn't look that big, but he's really solid.
I think he'd still fill out a little bit too. Wouldn't be surprised if he added 10 or 15 pounds to that frame as he continues to develop. I would actually take Buxton ahead of the guy you've got at number two. You've got Carlos Correa at two. It's splitting hairs. They're both great players, so I think they're going to be perennial all-stars. But Correa is one of those guys that we started talking about him before when the Astros brought in Jed Lowry. I'm not convinced that he stays at shortstop either. He's got the same problem that Corey Seager does. He's 6'4". You don't have many 6'4 shortstops hanging around the league. What does he do offensively, though? What is his ceiling as a hitter?
Look, I saw this guy in spring training, and I just could not believe how smooth he was at shortstop to begin with at 6'4". So I thought, wow, I knew who he was, but then I saw him hit, and the ball makes that special sound off his bat, and he very rarely missed the sweet spot. You know, he was a barrel of the bat hitter, took the ball all over the field. The very little swing and miss when I saw him. And I said to myself, this is a superstar. He's very exciting to watch. That's what I like about him. He plays quietly, but he is the loudest quiet I've ever seen. You don't hear him, you know, talking about this and that. And he's just a terrific player. I think Houston fans are going to love watching him every day. And for me, right now, he's a notch above Buxton, but it was close.
Yeah, I think the missing 2014 for Buxton, I mean, the amount of time he lost last year certainly hurt his stock for a few people, and he could very quickly regain that. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he comes through April and May and gets everybody very excited about what he's going to be again. But Correa is another one of those players that maybe people do overlook a little bit because he's in the Houston system. It's part of that rebuild there, and there were some questions as to whether he should have gone 1-1 a few years ago, but I don't know. I think he's actually going to be a star. It doesn't seem like there's a wide range of outcomes with him. It seems like he's pretty well established as a premier shortstop prospect who, even if he doesn't stick there, could be a very good defender at third base. Now, as we mentioned, we started with Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant is your number one prospect right now, and a lot of it's that he's major league ready, I think, too. I mean, you look at Bryant right now, he doesn't need the time at AAA. He's just going to get it anyway for the service time reasons that I mentioned.
That's exactly right. And I want to mention this, that guys like Jorge Soler didn't make my top 10, even though he's still a rookie and a prospect, because he's graduated. He's already played in the major league. So I try to look at guys that haven't graduated. You can find this list at MLBpipeline.com. And I think probably there are 15 to 20 can't-miss prospects, and of those can't-miss prospects in people's minds, five of them will miss. So prospects are just that, folks. You never know how they're going to play between the lines, but of these top 10, I don't think there are too many misses, if any.
No, this seems like a very talented group, top to bottom. Would be surprised if more than a couple of them didn't turn out to be perennial all-stars. Now, Bernie, we're going to go lightning round on the bottom half of our topics, if only because we basically have two episodes worth of content here. And I unfortunately, with the magazine workload, can't do a two-hour show. So we'll try to get through as many topics as we can here as we close things out. So we'll go lightning round. I always wanted to be a game show host, so I'll fire the questions at you. You let me know what you think. We'll just jump around here from topic to topic to cover some of the other key things that have gone down over the last couple of weeks. Irvin Santana signs with the Twins in free agency. Good move for Minnesota?
Terrific move for Minnesota. Great park for Santana. A lot of pressure is off him now. This is a very good fantasy pick, folks, because that is a very pitcher-friendly park. I love Santana there.
Yeah, I think the price will be pretty low in a lot of drafts, too. And the skills, the strikeout rate and walk rate last year with Atlanta were actually pretty good for Irvin Santana. The Indians signed Gavin Floyd. What does this mean for Danny Salazar and TJ House? Why would the Indians sign a guy like Gavin Floyd when they have so much quality young pitching already at their disposal?
Because they have options on their pitching. They want to lengthen their starting rotation. That means seven or eight guys. They want a veteran among all those young guys like Bauer and like Kluber. These are young guys. So now they want that veteran presence. And by the way, Floyd pitched very well until that elbow went out. He pitched very well for Atlanta. He had a funny bone injury and had surgery. And the Indians saw him in November. They think he's healthy. They're slotting him right in the rotation.
Staying with the Tribe, Jason Kipnis had finger surgery. He's expected to be ready for spring training. He suffered the injury while going through some off-season training workouts. Could this push Lindor to Cleveland faster, or do you think the Indians just find other ways, whether that's Jose Ramirez playing second base or just shuffling pieces around, if Kipnis has any setbacks?
The golden guy for the Indians is Mike Aviles. He will help your fantasy team because he'll play everywhere on the diamond, and he'll probably sell scorecards as well. If Kipnis is hurt, I look for Aviles to be in the lineup.
Jason Hamill returns to the Cubs. Had a lot of success there last year before the trade to Oakland. Had a run of four or five bad starts at the A's and actually pitched better after that, but those first few starts were so bad, and because the A's started to struggle, I think people looked at Hamill as even more of a bust than he actually was post-trade. Can he regain the form that we saw in the first half of last season?
Better in the National League than the American League. I think Hamill at the back end of the rotation makes sense for the Cubs as they buy time until C.J. Edwards is ready. I think Hamill was a good move for them, and I think you'll see a better Hamill with the Cubs than you saw with the A's.
Jason Mott leaves the Cardinals, signs with the Cubs. More saves in 2015, incumbent closer Hector Rondon or former closer Jason Mott?
Look, this was not a highly talked about move, but a terrific move for the Cubs. If this guy's healthy, he's throwing 100 miles an hour out of the pen. He gives them more flexibility at the back end of the bullpen. This is a terrific move, and this is a guy you want to look for if your league values holds. I really love this move, and it really helped the Cubs.
I think Mott's going to get more saves than Rondon. If Rondon struggles, he's the first guy they're going to turn to. I feel like this season, now that he's further away from Tommy John surgery, he'll be even more productive than he was last year when he wasn't quite the same guy coming back with the Cardinals. Now, the Cubs let Kouji Fujikawa go. Another pitcher that I was really curious about when he came over from Japan, some compared him to Mariano Rivera in terms of his impact as a closer in Japan. Hasn't materialized so far, but I think he's got really good stuff. The Rangers have signed Fujikawa. Could he take away that job from Neftali Feliz?
If Feliz falters, they've got a ton of guys that could move into that spot, and one of them is Fujikawa. This was a nice signing by the Rangers, and I was surprised that the Cubs didn't re-sign him with, you know, put everything behind him, but he's now pitching for the Rangers, and he's going to face another hitter per lineup versus the National League, so I think that could have a bit of an impact, but not terribly. Fujikawa is a good hold, saves guy.
Brandon McCarthy and Brett Anderson both with the Dodgers as the Dodgers bolster the back of their rotation. McCarthy getting a multi-year deal. Brett Anderson on a one-year contract filled with incentives. Both of these guys are hilarious on Twitter, by the way. They're great Twitter follows. But McCarthy and Anderson, plenty of issues staying healthy. Do you see either one of these guys taking the ball for more than 30 starts this season?
Well, what if Brett Anderson can get out there for 30 starts? My goodness, this is a guy that everybody says is easily one of the best pitchers, has some of the best stuff in baseball when he's healthy. I've heard it over and over and over again. Now let's see if he can do it with the Dodgers. If he's healthy, my goodness, they just replaced three guys in their rotation with this guy because he's that good. We'll see.
See, I think with Anderson, they're going to find a way to get close to 30 starts out of him. I think McCarthy, he's figured something out with his offseason training. He did it last year, finally got away from those shoulder injuries. I'm actually pretty confident in both these guys, despite their track records. McCarthy throwing the cutter, totally different pitcher last year after that trade to the Yankees. And Anderson, as you mentioned, the stuff is so good. I want to have him everywhere because the cost in fantasy leagues will be next to nothing. And the payoff could actually be pretty huge. Wade Miley, traded to Boston. Allen Webster, Ruby De La Rosa, and Raimel Flores going to Arizona. Who's the winner of that trade? Who do you like better, Arizona's side or Boston getting Miley?
I'm very excited for Arizona in this deal. First of all, I think the Green Monster in Boston is going to get a lot more dense simply because Miley gives up some home runs and long balls. And pitching in Boston, you're going to see a lot of balls go off the Green Monster. He's either very, very good or pretty mediocre. So be careful with Wade Miley in Boston. Now, let's talk about Alan Webster and Ruby De La Rosa, who moved together to Boston from the Dodgers and now are moving together to Arizona from Boston. Both of them, huge upside, low risk, high reward. They could have hit a home run with both of them. Big stuff, big arms. If one of the two comes through, it's a terrific deal. If neither of the two come through, then they're going to be scratching their head. But I like both of them to come through.
I think even if both were to fail as starters, they could both be very, very good late-inning relievers at some point down the road, too. So there's pretty good range of outcomes that give Arizona the upper hand in that trade in the long run. Justin Masterson returns to a familiar place. He signs with the Red Sox. Do you like his chances of staying in their rotation all year?
Load your lineup with left-handed hitters when you're facing Justin Masterson, and it will be a short game for Justin. He still has not figured out how to get lefties out. Hopefully he can figure it out in Boston. I'm not sure he can. I was patient with him on every one of my fantasy teams, and I finally gave up. It's a fact. He gets right-handed hitters out. The sinker ball leads to a lot of ground ball outs. He cannot get lefties out. That's the problem. If he fixes it, he's an all-star. If it's not fixed, he's a mess.
Staying in the AL East, Jake McGee is hurt. He won't be ready for opening day. Had surgery on his elbow. It wasn't Tommy John. I believe it was bone chips that were removed. Is Brad Boxberger the guy who closes? Is it Kevin Jepsen? Or is it possibly Grant Balfour? Or even Ernesto Friere as he moves to Tampa and tries to put his career back on track?
I think it's Kevin Jepsen. I've always thought that he had closer stuff. I'm going to look for him in spring training. You won't know by watching games because closers don't pitch the ninth inning in spring training. They pitch in the middle so they can see some stronger hitters. By the end of the game in spring training, for the first 3 weeks, or you know, you're seeing rookies. So closers pitch in the middle of the game in spring training. So Boxberger is an option, but Jepsen is my choice right now.
All right, Chris Davis has an Adderall exemption back for 2015. Didn't have one last year. Obviously got suspended. Has one game left on his suspension to begin this year. He's going 75th overall in early drafts right now. So he's a late fifth round pick if we're talking like a 15-team mixed league. Are you buying into a Chris Davis rebound at that price for this season?
I'm afraid I'm not. I think losing Cruz is going to take a lot of steam away from Davis. I'm a big protection guy. They don't have it anymore. And I think you're going to see more of the Texas Chris Davis again than the good Baltimore Chris Davis. I hope I'm wrong. I'll take something in the middle, but I'm going to shy away unless they can get another bat.
Sticking with ADP, Carlos Gonzalez going about 43rd overall, so a late third-round pick. This is a guy that often goes as a first-rounder just based on his potential. He's been cleared to resume hitting as he comes back from a knee injury. Is that the right spot for him? Are you willing to take that much risk on your team in round three?
Look, the guy hasn't played a full season for 3 years. I'm going to shy away, DVR. I've got to have guys that play. Fantasy is all about at-bats. And when you're on the bench for a month a year, that's not helping me. A third round, maybe. Fourth round, yes. But yeah, certainly not the first two rounds. No way, not anymore.
He's tempting where he's going. Even if you said never again, at that price, you look at him and you have to at least think about it because of the impact he could have if he somehow gets 135 or 140 games this season. Last question, Bernie. The Royals add Edinson Volquez, they add Chris Medlin, and they get Alex Rios on a one-year deal. Do you like these moves for Kansas City?
I like them. I think those are nice additions. You lose Shields, you pick up Volquez. He's not bad. The big win there could be Chris Medlin, who you and I have both loved until he got hurt. He's one of those Atlanta guys that couldn't stay healthy. If Medlin is anywhere close to his past, watch out. Great move.
Yeah, I think it might take a couple of months into the season for Medlin to get all the way back since it's his second Tommy John surgery, but a good low-risk signing there where if he does come back, suddenly they bolster the middle of that rotation in a pretty big way. I mean, Volquez obviously carries a little risk. I'm not sure how much I like him outside of Pittsburgh. And Rios on a one-year deal, I feel like, is a great buy low. Ned Yost loves to run, too. I know Rios is probably unlikely to push that 40 stolen base mark again, but I think he can get 25 or 30 bags. And I think even in a difficult home park to hit home runs in, I think he can get back to that 8 to 10 home run range. This is a guy that was hurt all of last year, and a lot of players around him in that Texas lineup were hurt, too. So that hurt Rios' counting stats.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is a guy that has put up numbers. And when you put up numbers, if he can stay healthy, and boy, how many times have we had said that today, if he can stay healthy? Rios has to stay healthy, and he's getting older, but that's a good fit for him. That really is.
All right, Bernie, before we sign off, what's coming up at MLB.com and MLBpipeline.com from you?
New series starting January 1st from me on MLBpipeline.com. I will be talking about every prospect, team by team, that has a chance to impact the 2015 season. So that will be 3 a week up until and through spring training.
Excellent. Definitely check that out, MLBpipeline.com. Magazine season for me. We are going to record again next week, Friday. So have a safe and happy New Year's, all the listeners out there. Enjoy bringing in the new year with family and friends. Hopefully you're having a great and safe holiday season. Let's keep it that way here over the next week or so. Now, if you want to sponsor this podcast, you can do that by contacting Shannon at rotowire.com. The views and opinions of Short Hops are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you'd like to check out RotoWire for the next 10 days, you can do that for free, rotowire.com/pod. Bernie, it's been a pleasure as always. Enjoy the New Year's celebrations, and we'll talk to you next week.
U2 DVR, you can follow me at Bernie Pleskov, follow Derek at Derek Van Riper, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, everybody. Thanks for listening to Short Hops.